go to 399. It has a song where Joyce attacks Lewis, and it's about the argument over time and space, which we were doing earlier today with Bert, and the quark. So the quark, the first line, three quarks for Mr. Mark, I think, is the first line on page 383. Then on 399, the argument over what is time and space is in the song at the end of the chapter. So it's very... Joyce was taking on modern physics. That was
yes, that, and Zappa too.
Yes,
so we could
Zappa.
Actually, hey, start with the particles.
Hey, you know, you were saying to me, you asked me the other day, well, why? You said, I don't care if Ion doesn't like Zappa. I like Zappa. Well, I fucking squeezed Ion, got him to admit he likes Zappa, so we won't have to do that anymore.
No, because actually. When I was reading this Zappa the Hard Way, I did like an abstract in my head on how Zappa composition, his concepts for composing, are completely ionic, and one can understand many of the things you're talking about with his concepts.
Well, maybe we should go into that right now, since you've got it on your mind. So you want to explain what you mean? You want to go into it?
Yes.
Okay, let me mute the others so there's no interruption for this important exegesis. Where's Bert? Oh, yeah, Bert's here with his name. I don't have to look. So mute all.
All participants are now muted.
Well, I don't know where Roxy was. Sorry, they got to go back. Unmute.
All participants are now unmuted.
Yes.
That you're there. Okay, yeah, there's that. Okay, people, hang around if you're not interested in this. Come back later for lots of incredible stuff from Ion that I did this week, including I got Ion to explain Barb's answer to Barb's question about describing ions. We got some details on that. That's pretty good.
All participants are now muted.
Bring in Bert. Where is Bert? Right there. And is that you, Roxy? Right there? I just did you? It's not you? Okay, this one. That's you, Roxy?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm going to bring in Reiner and Gail because they're musicians themselves. Gail's a composer, so let's see. Where are... Well, you're on this phone. You just have to unmute yourself. Okay, so Roxy told me a little bit about this the other day, but she's going to have more time to spell it out. So she sees in Zappa's compositions an anticipation of ionism, ionic techniques or meaning. So take it away, Roxy. Go ahead.
Yes, in many ways. You were commenting that I told you I feel he's guiding me when I do the videos, but it's also when I do research that I don't really do. It's like today I just felt like reading the cliché and archetype, and all these things are mentioned. He mentioned the book to your friend, and he just mentioned the M in the hand, and in this phrase, three quarks for Mr. Mark. It's like the M mark.
Yeah.
And in the
Roxy,
quark,
the M
mark.
Listen to this, Roxy. The M is the symbol in Joyce's notebooks when he's making Finnegan's Wake. The symbol for Finn or HCE is an M, which rotates, so it becomes a backwards E, and then a W, and then a proper E, and then an M. The four positions of the M. So that's the letter, the 13th letter Ion worked with. Okay?
Yes, and
that's the image.
It's for me, it's really impressive how I've been doing this during the day, and then these things come in the conversations. So for me, there is no doubt that there is this big composition. And the other day, as I'm now working on the videos, and I see the Cheops pyramid. Then
Cheops, yep.
The Temple of Man that was studied by the Lubics. And it's a giant
Lubics,
man.
The 20th century, the Lubics, the early 20th century writer.
Yeah, Schroeder, the Lubics. And it's a giant man, and the temple, it's like a school for higher teachings. Mm. The Egyptians will go through the whole anatomy of man and learn about the secret functions of the organs and the fluids, because as they mummified the pharaohs, they knew about all the anatomic parts. So there is this first version of this giant and the study of anatomy that is also mentioned in Ulysses. You say by Joyce,
right.
All this.
Yeah, and the giant is the structure of Finn at the beginning of the book. The giant in the landscape.
Yes. And then this giant is copied in Paris.
Yeah.
And in the Kabbalah it's said all the information of the universe is contained in the human body. And how do they put the information in this giant as cultural heritage objects that then are analyzed by the particle accelerator.
In the loop.
So it's like in the loop.
In
so
the loop.
The collection starts with the Mona Lisa that was a gift by Leonardo to Frank. And this is like an abstract of what we've been doing.
Yeah.
But this is
let me
the...
Roxy, let me just say this. If you look at the layout of Paris near the museum, you go down several buildings, the Arc de Triomphe or something, it stretches over quite far. It's a human form, and the Louvre is in there in the middle. Maybe the Louvre is near the head, Roxy? Does that fit? The Louvre is
No, the Louvre itself is a copy of the Temple of Man. It's the whole giant.
Oh, it's all within, it's all within the Louvre. Louvre area.
Yeah, and it took many centuries to build, and then in the 80s, the pyramids were built, one upwards, one inverted.
In 1989. So what Roxy's saying is that the Louvre is one of the first places they gather all these artifacts from around the world, and they put it inside the giant of the Louvre, so they're miming knowledge that's contained in the body, so they put all their Gutenbergian knowledge artifacts in the same map.
Yes, but it's like,
wow.
Do you realize the concept continuity that starts with the
Cheops
pyramid?
Yeah.
And
conceptual
it's
continuity.
Going on now as we talk about this. It's like...
Yeah, what she's saying is the people who run the Louvre have been doing this and working with this information for 400, 500 years. And so Mitterrand, when he put the pyramid thing in there in 1989, no one knew why he was doing it. It was quite controversial. But he was fitting in with King Frank, his original vision of copying the Egyptian world. So the Egyptian meme is the conceptual continuity at the Louvre as they pass it on through management through the centuries.
Yes, because it doesn't
right,
matter
man.
Which type of government there
politician.
Is.
Yeah.
There's the monarchy, then it's Napoleon, the Republic.
Just a minute, Reiner, you can go on. Get off mute, Reiner. We should have heard that.
Yes, and this project goes on, and the particle accelerator is placed under the inverted pyramid to study with the technology
called under the pyramid.
Inverted
put in
pyramid.
Yeah. Now Reiner's asking something. Who? Which, you mean in 89?
Yeah.
Ian Bynum. Do you think he was, he was told to do it. Was Ian? Can you hear Reiner, Roxy? He doesn't seem to be coming in to me.
No, he's not coming through.
Oh, you got your headset on, you got the mic on. Maybe the phone's not on. No, put the phone on. Chris?
Oh.
Yeah, that may be it.
You can hear me now?
You hear him right, Bert?
No.
Mm-mm.
No.
Not what? Really.
Hear him in the background from you.
Are you plugged in?
Are we
so
now
where's
good?
The wire? You don't have your wire. That's in. The Y can't. Now, you should. There should be no word mute. Okay. Now,
all
you
right.
should be heard. Can you hear him now?
No.
Well,
only in the background from you, Bob.
That's odd. Your phone's not. Maybe the phone went dead.
Oh,
okay. So we got to get you on the other phone. Where's that other one? I don't know. Maybe. Just take it off and speak into the phone for now. You know, just.
Hey. Hi, guys.
You can hear him now?
Can you hear me now?
Oh, no. That's a
no.
dead phone. Jesus. Oh, here's one. Here's one over here. Okay. All right, this should work.
I am still here.
Yeah. Do you know the name of the architect, Roxy? Einbein or whatever?
No, I am Pai, Chinese.
Oh,
yeah.
I am Pai,
yeah.
P-E-I.
Pai, yeah. Yeah, but you pronounce it Pai.
Yes.
Did
yeah,
he know?
The Pai and the golden meme are very important in the everything. In the,
so the even the selection of I am Pai makes sense then, doesn't it?
Yeah, the name sounds like Pai.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. That was one of my intuitions as well. So I'm glad I wasn't alone on that one.
No, it's like very ironic that how this Ion plays with the words and in it,
yeah.
He puts all these things everywhere. Like in
but Roxy, did Mr. Pai say anything about the pyramids along the lines you're talking about publicly in interviews?
No.
Nothing.
Yeah, that's. I was hoping that was something that we'd hear about, but I guess unless they didn't want to make it public, I suppose. But
yeah,
that would be likely too. I mean, I could imagine them not wanting to go public with it. However, I was just curious, and I'm glad that you confirmed my own curiosity, Roxy. Appreciate that.
Yes, but
we don't know nothing.
Well, and just in the sense of Pi being significant, I thought was really interesting too. So it's very Joycean too.
Right. So I'm
so
looking at.
It's very interesting
word,
that this month there was this conference and they were explaining the new EGLE, the particle accelerator in the Louvre.
Mm-hmm.
And as they explained, they use a technique called ionic beaming, and to scan the objects, they use magnetism, frequency, polarities, all these things Ion has been telling us, because that's how the particles move and bond with frequencies and magnetism.
Well,
and,
listen to this, Roxy. So Pai, however you say his name, he returned to China for the first time in 1975 to design a hotel. And he designed the Bank of China Tower in Hong Kong, a skyscraper in Hong Kong for the Bank of China 15 years later. In the early 80s, he was the focus of controversy when he designed a glass and steel pyramid for the Museum du Louvre in Paris. Now, you told me there was a lot of controversy, but did he initiate it? Did he bring in something that would make him unpopular? Was he forced to, or did he impose it? But he was the focus of it all. What do you think of that? What do you know about the controversy?
Well, the thing is, there were always big lines and crowds because of the white stone that are attracted to the Louvre.
Yeah.
And they wanted to make things more modern and better for the visitors. So he proposed this concept to have different, you can go into different parts of the Louvre, you enter, and you can go, if you have a specific interest, into the Egyptian or the classic sculptures and this and that. So the crowds sort of flow better. And so he designed like an underground area. They have all these restaurants and the shops and the toilets and the lockers and like a visitor center information, all these things. So that was the way he was explaining this his project. that it was a way to make the Louvre more modern and more practical, because he said once he visited the Louvre and he wanted to go to the toilet, and it was impossible to find the toilet, and it was really... So he thought, we have to make this more functional. But actually, behind all this, there is a big project, and maybe I think the whole humanity has been working on this, and we had to go through the genesis of the alchemy, of the chemistries, and the medias, and that's something. I have a dream in which Ion was doing all this amazing alchemical talk, you know, playing with the words, like very Jewish and really amazing. And I remember he was saying the word laboratory, the laboratory. So this is the lab, the chemistry, and the oratory, the speech. That is like
lab.
Caroline is,
yeah.
Caroline is the lab, and Bob
right.
is the oratory. So there is right. the laboratory.
And, so we have to ask Ion if I am Pi was initiated or instructed to do the Egyptian thing, because he gets all the credit in the popular internet stuff for imposing the Egyptian idea.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, also Mitterrand. He was the one that said this pyramid is going to be made.
He initiated?
Yes, the whole idea of modernizing the Louvre, and then he said we're going to do this pyramid that was proposed
okay.
by this architect. I think it was
yeah.
already done by maybe Saint-Germain and Bob. Other books.
Right. No, but listen to this. Late 70s, reading LaRouche's materials, he was pointing out the cult from the Egyptian Coptic religion. It had Anwar Sadat was a member of the cult, and they went on into a lot of the Egyptian influence and the Coptic church in some trilateral elite, or I don't know if it's Freemason or something. I have to go back and read it, but definitely the Egyptian connection was a big deal from Rouge's point of view in the elite's plans. And that's what you're saying, Roxy. Whether they were bad elites or not, they definitely, since King Francis, had an Egyptian plan. And it might have been because I told Moses what to do, and I was helping King Frank. He's got more information than that on today. So this is my fucking project. You know,
so
I don't know how he got in there. I was asleep that day, and he got in.
He came in through payday.
Yeah, payday, PEI, man. Through Prince Edward Island too, PEI. I always hated that place. It's a nice garden
yeah.
state, but it's a useless fucking island.
Prince Edward Island. Also something. We had been saying that to understand what's going on now, you have to read the Bible. Like,
yeah.
All these
well,
things.
Well, you have to
the,
know what I am saying, but you don't have to read the Bible,
and
Roxy.
The
you don't need to read the Bible.
Israel,
you just need to listen to the 68 hours of Revelations that we did. That's what you have to hear. It's like
yeah.
Remag is not your normal magnesium. You know, so it's the Remag miracle, not the magnesium miracle. So also, for the Bible, you do Ion's version of the Bible. That's the only thing that's interesting. Then you find out all these other guys in history were using the Bible for not necessarily Christian reasons, and we know what they were looking for. So would you agree with those words, Roxy?
Yes, because it's actually also like a plan. Like it took thousands of years, but then the Jews are... go back to Israel, and they want to expand Israel. That includes Lebanon, Syria,
yeah,
part
the
of
greater,
Egypt.
The greater Israel.
And it's going to take, I don't know how long, but then they're going to do the temple, and there is a mosque, and this and that. And so many things that are like prophecies in the Bible, is like, it doesn't matter how long it's going to take, but it's like these things are going to happen.
Right.
And
now,
then
this week, let me say something, Roxy. The Phineas Wake begins with a tour through a museum, and it's a battle, basically emphasizing the battle between Napoleon and Wellington. which was a national historical thing in the 1810s. So you've got Joyce beginning with a giant in the ground, and then it becomes a museum, which then becomes a Louvre. And a lot of what Roxy discovered about what we do and how it was predicted or understood or intuited by Nostradamus, Rabelais, and Leonardo da Vinci, Michelangelo, and King Frank, and a few others, which you see maybe, Jay always told me he's watched more of the series, you'll see it in this new TV series, Versailles. They're part of this battle. So what was I saying? I listed off for King Frank. What was I saying about them? Why was I listing off those?
Well,
guys?
They are all working in the...
Finnegan's Wake.
Yeah, Finnegan's
so
Wake,
you
yeah.
can see a lot of this in Finnegan's Wake. Yeah. And so what do you see in Zappa that's related to this, Roxy?
Well, first, this concept of the conceptual continuity. That everything you do, it's a big body of work that is a work in progress.
Yeah, it's resonating with all stages of your own creativity.
Yes, and it's not only personal work, but it's like everything is adding together, and it's the here comes everybody, and many may not understand what they're really doing, like Joyce when he wrote The Finnegan's Wake.
Right.
Or Marshall McLuhan. Maybe he had some intuition, because it's really impressive. Like,
you know, McLuhan did say that the major artists of the 20th century, they have to be Egyptian. And he meant by that like the pharaoh, you programmed the whole world, the whole environment. So Joyce programmed the whole world in Finney's Wake and in earlier in Ulysses. McLuhan did that. So the Egyptian idea is that the real art is the one that programs the whole environment. And that's like creating a new civilization, which is what we're doing with Ion. So that's the art idea.
This
may be what Wagner, listen to this, Roxy, Wagner started to get that when he said, well, we've got to put all the arts together in the synesthesia. And he got into the Egyptian iconography, too.
Hugely, yeah. And yeah.
So it comes in with the telegraph.
That was actually the agenda of Frank Zappa. He wanted to make a big opera called Diopha, in which he was going to use all medias, all arts.
I should read that.
Yeah.
I was going to go over Reiner and Gale, so we'll try to fit that in
besides
tonight.
I'll
read the script.
He also wanted to become president of the United States, but he got sick of cancer and that project stopped. But he had the agenda of becoming the environment programmer.
Mm.
Who? Zappa?
Frank Zappa, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
He has all kinds of humorous references to it. He has a song called Egyptian Restrut. You know, the Egyptian strutting, Egyptian Restrut. He has another song called Portuguese Moon Landing. So he was pointing out that the satellite effort would go even to the third world countries. He has the great story, The Grand Wazoo, which is about Egyptian times, you know, on the cover of the 1972 album, The Grand Wazoo. We can read that. Now, how do I make this sound come forward? I'm just wondering, how do I broadcast this? I don't know how that works.
I just keep talking because
I'm plugged in.
The hidden ground of the Louvre of making there was a big medieval castle made with white stone, with a big tower where the kings of France will put their treasures. But then Frank the First decided to tear down the Bonamy container, this big tower. And he starts building the head of the giant, the Louvre. And the hidden ground of, historically they say, well, Frank, I call him Frank because people call him Francis the First, but I call him Frank like Frank. He lived most of the time in Fontainebleau, but the car was always moving around. When he was in Paris, he then stayed at the Louvre, and then he was building this haunting castle in which he was just several times, which is Chambord, but it was not a haunting castle. It is actually, he was trying to build the New Jerusalem, and he built what he called the City of Heaven, that connected heaven and earth. Like I was saying all the time, what is bounded on heaven is bounded on earth, and in the central part of the castle there is the double helix stairs, and that's the connection, the genetic information. Again, is the we go like in the Temple of Man to the human anatomy, and it's like, how did they knew these things? There is no way to, I mean, I think Leonardo also reached the three pillars, the stone, the elixir of life, and the universal knowing, because it's amazing all the things he was working on, and the real hidden ground of the Louvre and these castles is not only to live there when he's in Paris. He was starting a big project that he knew he's not going to finish, but he has to start them, and he has to start also the collection of the cultural heritage objects that are going to be analyzed with the particle accelerator. And Zappa always said, when he played a solo, he was sculpting with the particles of the air molecules. And in a way, when we see how this particle accelerator works, it's like a quantum music, because these particles are dancing, are sculpting their plasma. I don't know, because it's not air.
Yeah.
And they're, yeah, they have these frequencies, and it's really like quantum music. And Zappa was very interested in the work of Pauline Oliveros because of these works, that she has very high frequencies and very low frequencies that are beyond our hearing range. But then we hear the product of these frequencies adding together. And he said, Frank Zappa said, this is how things manifest. And actually it's true, because the particles move and bond together with frequency. And this is something that is analyzed with the particle accelerator. And they know things that are not even documented in a normal way, that are not even written, like the exchanges of technology between different civilizations, how some elements came from a specific mine, and then they were bought and brought somewhere else, and many, many things that, for example, in the Neolithic happened that are not documented, but they can know it because of, they can know the techniques in which that were used to build all these objects.
With and, the accelerator.
Yes, and the exact composition of the elements in that object, because each element has a different irradiation, and that is called the luminescence, and they do mappings with this. Also, the particles have some color. So that's again frequency. So there is this micro music happening that is revealing all this information.
Right.
And
let me add something here.
I was aware
in the Bob Marshall. Hey, Roxy, hold it, Roxy. In the Bob Marshall interview with Zappa, Zappa makes a big deal out of rates. That's his word for frequency. He talks about the different rates in matter. R-A-T-E-S.
Yeah, the frequency is only the speed.
Yeah.
Of.
Doesn't the speed create frequency? The speed of spin? So what was your next thought? What
the
were
speed of dynamic. Well, then there is another important concept in Zappa, the A-A-F-R-A-A. Is that the...
Yeah, anything for any reason, anywhere at all, something like that.
Or
anything,
anytime, anywhere, for no reason at all.
Right.
And Zappa will mix all musical genres, or he will quote things from classical music, contemporary music, pop culture.
Yep.
And he will mix very simple, repetitive type of American style music with very complex contemporary things. So
overlaid.
This all can happen anytime. Is the environment, since the electricity is our environment.
The discontinuity. The discontinuities in the electric age.
He's translating all these things. Marshall McLuhan is talking about how the artist translates the environment. And this is a reflection. He could not be limited to be a contemporary composer and write for orchestras. He went to developing technologies.
He tried to make TV shows.
All types of media, advertisement.
Right. Because it was synesthesia. Now, let me bring in Gail. Gail's an expert on and close friend of Pauline Oliveros. And Gail has to speak on her coming up.
Mm.
How do you fit what you know, Gail, into what Roxy's saying around Pauline's ideas?
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. She, I don't think she ever formally talked about things like rates, frequencies. She had a very intuitive approach, but she knew what was going on.
Well, she did. We talked with her, and she knows.
Yeah, Gail listened to our interview, Roxy. Gail has listened to our interview.
Yeah.
No, but he has the knowing of acoustics, physics. He knows
what's
how.
What's more specific? What are you saying, Roxy? What's more specific?
No, she said that.
She said what?
Yeah, actually, the work that Zappa was interested in is about the frequencies and the addition of frequencies and subtraction of the frequencies. So,
Gail knows about that.
That's
She can explain that concept.
About that piece?
Yes.
It was, she was working with difference tones, and so the oscillators we're producing tones that are far above our human hearing, over 20,000 hertz. But rather than figure out that she had a 14,000 and a 14,200 and that it would produce a difference tone of 200 hertz. She had it. She had a more intuitive, I would call it a tactile. In fact, in one article I wrote, I called it audio tactile approach to it, where she didn't actually do the arithmetic, but she knew what she was working with in terms of perception, which is getting to be a key word tonight.
Yeah.
She knew how to listen to what was happening, but she didn't do the arithmetic behind it.
Right.
Does that clarify anything?
What do you make of that, Roxy?
Yes, but I don't think that's the interest for an artist. Somebody who is making research of sound may have that interest of doing the fractions and the calculations and measurements. But
you're saying that's what an artist would do? Or are you saying Pauline as an artist?
Or a engineer.
Yeah, that's science.
No.
Yeah, the artist
But she knows what's going on with sound, even if she doesn't know the exact frequencies and how they're adding on or subtracting.
And the idea...
Now,
right.
We have better ways to do that and easier, but at the time, just to analyze sound, it would require a big computer and a lot of time to do all the mathematical calculations.
She could have done that piece as a live performance. It's really an audio recording of a live performance done in the studio. And the reason it wasn't brought out on stage is because all the gear was too big and too hard to connect that part. That part of the piece had to do with the physical format of the equipment she was using. But I don't think she needed to get it all analyzed by computers. She had also a just intonation accordion built for her, and she played that also, but she didn't play it the way a lot of people interested in tuning often approach a tuning by saying, well, I want this major chord to modify into or to modulate into that particular augmented chord, and then I want to modulate from that into some other... she did not plan out those kinds of harmonic sequences. She played, I guess you could say she played by ear, even when she was working in microtonal music.
Now, Roxy, listen to this.
Well, she played by body, by quantum hearing, and she used
the
term
hearing.
Digger.
Yeah.
But listen
quantum
to this, Roxy.
So
when
this
she
is
was
very
doing different. This, Roxy, when she was doing this, she was 100 yards from McLuhan's coach house. In Toronto.
She
was right near. I don't know if she knew about McLuhan.
Proximity.
What?
Vibrational proximity.
Yeah, vibrational proximity.
Yeah,
and she's influencing Zappa, who was impressed with the concept that higher frequencies mix with lower sub-hearing frequencies. And what we see is a mixture of that. And so when UFOs would show up or odd anomalies, that was something from a combination of the above hearing and below hearing, then would break through to our normal middle range hearing. So he understood all kinds of anomalies based on her layout, her image.
In the page of the wake where it's phrased with the quark and the he also mentions Tristan and U.S. Olde.
Isolde?
And then also
Tristan and Isolde?
Yes, but he writes Usolde, like U.S. Olde.
Right, Usolde.
Then,
but you know what?
And yes, because Trump is the trumpet. I just immediately thought Trump and U.S. Olde. But then also later... let me say this. He says also Isola instead of...
Yes.
Isola.
That chapter, what that chapter is that Tristan has stolen Isol from King Mark, and he is making love to her in the boat, and the four evangelists, the four posts, the four spears, the four everything, are watching them and analyzing it. So some interpreters see they're watching a porno movie almost and talking about it. That's what's going on in that chapter. So there's this sexual level to the quark phenomena.
Hmm.
Yes, it's the rubbing of the particles. But I found it very interesting that the quark is there and the isola-misola, that is the fasola. And telling us about this frequency. It's in polarities and blah, 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 blah. That this quantum music at the level of the particles, these frequencies that intuitively Paulino Oliveros
understood.
Sort of.
I mean, she could have been reading.
Understood and also Zappa.
Right. Now, look, here's two points. Pauline was around the crowd that would be reading Bucky Fuller. And Bucky Fuller said, most of the 20th century knowledge searching was in the invisible, the electric, subatomic, the acoustic, not visual. So Bucky understood the invisible explorations, and she might have been reading Bucky, making a metaphor out of it. Gail, why don't you tell us a bit about what you would say about her, not with that experiment in mind, but her general, what is her listening she's talking about?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm going to try and say how it felt like to play with her last January, a little over a year ago, and a whole bunch of other people, of course. There was about 8 of us playing.
I mean, with instruments.
Yeah, with instruments. It's a different state of being. Would you say that?
Yeah.
Where you are have very few barriers between you and the other people you're playing with. And in that sense, it's also very unself-conscious. You have very little yourself as a role player or as an ego or even any kind of identity. All that seems to not matter. And so then what takes its place of all these so-called normal perceptions is the way you are stimulated and inspired by the people you're playing with, but also the way there's almost an additive inspiration level where you come up with, this has happened to me many times, you come up with an idea of something you can do on your instrument that you've never thought of before, and it comes from the combining of all the people that are playing together.
Mm. Well, that's synergy. And Zappa talked at that time about the ESP among musicians. So you would say there's a level of ESP going on, or transpersonative, in this interaction.
Yeah, I would say that.
Yeah. So how is that different from improvisation in jazz?
Well, improvisation in jazz is not a one-definition thing. There's a whole range of it. Sometimes there were band leaders. Sometimes there was the expectation that you'd keep a little bit of, that you would maintain a rhythmic awareness of that you would share, that would be part of there the group. Other times there wasn't.
Yeah.
Reiner has something to say here.
The interesting thing about working with Pauline too is that not only do the musicians feel this kind of synergy, this kind of combined completion of each other's sentences almost, or phrases or thoughts, because there was that kind of simultaneity as well. But the same thing happened as an effect within the audience. So the extended, so her attitude not only affected how the musicians combined what they did and you know, continued to relate to one another, there was a sense that was also translated to the audience, which continues as a kind of collective instrument in the receiving of the sound. So it even, to my mind, felt that the audience's receptivity to the sound added to the generosity of what was being presented before them.
Right. Were they allowed to do anything?
No, I think the idea of the notion of deep listening and the notion of listening beyond the obvious and to try and listen within tonalities, within sounds, within frequencies, and so on. I think the audience was pulled into that, and just by their attentiveness furthered that.
Right. So Zappa always would try to have an audience participation part of his concerts because he knew they needed to, you know, express themselves from the effect of the concert. Similarly, what you're saying, Zappa was hoping the audience would do that. And some of the stuff I'm playing, you hear Ion lecture, you hear Zappa lecture the audience playfully, tell them how to get involved in it, how to listen.
Yeah.
He's doing that all the time.
And given that we're talking about two very different kinds of audiences, that has a lot to do with how he handles it. He handled the audience as a person with how Pauline's audience was the participant. There was a very different agreement that was happening.
Yeah.
I mean, Zappa introduced things through the popular culture and an audience that were there to be entertained, whereas Pauline's audiences tended to be those audiences who understood, on some level at least, that they were integral to the whole experience.
They weren't there just to be entertained.
Right. They were integral to the whole experience. And in fact, it's a shared experience, and it also freed people up to listen differently. So
what did Pauline do? Did she prepare you guys before for the experience? Like, what did you have to know from Pauline to be in the band?
You didn't have to do anything.
You had to be able to play, maybe?
Maybe. She gave a talk, probably it was right at that same conference where this took place, where she said that her definition of a virtuosic musician is one who can play with anybody in any style.
Interesting. I think Ornette Coleman did that. I've had stories of people visiting Ornette Coleman, and he would put an instrument in their hands and almost demand they just start playing, even though they didn't know how to play. He didn't require them to know what they were doing.
Yeah, and they're both from a similar era of that opening up of audience reception and participation. So absolutely, I think there was certainly, and I know she knew all these guys as well, so
let's
say there was communication there.
Yeah, and the big idea or formulation of it was McLuhan's broad generalization that the Gutenberg media made the audience passive. The electric media, so 150 years, telegraph on, required sensory completion by the audience. So the audience was always, nobody was in the audience. Everybody was making the news, making information, making data interpretations, and that translated into the new idea of including the audience or popular culture of the audience in the artwork, you know, from painting, sculpture, to music. So the broad, McLuhan was saying, the electric media is making Zappa, Pauline Oliveros, Charlie Mingus, Ornette Coleman naturally responding to the mandate that television and radio insisted on people.
Hmm. Yeah, and with Pauline, she played with some very skilled players, of course. She also played with people who were limited in terms of their intellectual or cognitive or physical abilities.
Right.
Put a lot of effort into freeing those people to be able to interact with sound. There's this automatic music instrument that was devised to because one of her friends worked with children who were in wheelchairs and some of them couldn't communicate verbally.
Right.
And they arranged a software system where the software places a red dot on some part of the person's face, like their nose usually. And then that person, even if all they can do is move their head from left to right or up and down, they can then play music and join bands and play the audio.
Right. So in June, July 1971, I'm in the near Ben Lomond, outside of Palo Alto, up in the hills outside San Francisco, visiting Don Van Vliet, otherwise known as Captain Beefheart. So it was in the morning, and he got his band together, the Magic Band, in some little cottage, and me and Carol are standing in there, and he invites me to join in. Now, I am the most unmusical fuck-up. No way would I ever consider myself to be in music, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can't play, I can't sing. I'm lousy in music. I got good taste, but I know what's going on. So he invites me to fucking play, so I jumped in.
What did he give you to play?
Piano and a drum. I could do either piano or drum.
So I'm doing these ridiculous fucking noises while they're rehearsing and doing their stuff. They all just seem to be warming up for the actual rehearsing of particular songs, which they could all do by rote, even though it sounded like it was improvised. So I played for about half an hour with them. Then we stopped, and Beefheart says, "Your problem, Bob, is that you're looking at me. You're trying to follow me." He pointed out my eye bias. That's true. I was trying to look at Beefheart, sort of see what he was doing, and then make rhythms. And he said, "That's not the way to do it, Bob." So that was my lesson about how in music you got to fucking play blindfolded almost. So that helped me, though, to realize when you're with these guys, at least with him, you don't look at him. You have to be using your ear. But in Zappa's world, you had to look at his hands.